If you want insight and solutions, you're in for a unique experience. One where you're free to ask questions about where you're stuck, ask and hear questions of an everyday variety, global or personal, deep or ancient. All questions are welcome. Any human issue or problem is seen with a new awareness from Patricia's powerful understanding of whole brain thinking. Receive insights you never thought were possible, and be comforted to hear some insights you always knew were right. Discover the profound and the creative value that problems can give us. And now, Patricia Sun.
Welcome, welcome to Trust the Problem. I'm Patricia Sun, and today on Trust the Problem, we're really going to be talking about something that's said over and over these days, everywhere you look, and like many things that we do that to, we don't really think about what it means. And what it is freedom. You know, why do we want freedom? I mean, that seems kind of obvious, I would think, in so many ways. Just not to mention it feels good to be free. But what does it really mean? And what is it? And I wanted to talk about that today, not only in the political sense of not just our country, but the world and through history. What does freedom mean? But what does it mean for us in our bodies and in our own health? You know, I'm reminded of a great quote. I'll probably have several this time about Thomas Jefferson. He's so good on this subject. But he said, liberty is to the collective body, us, what health is to every individual body. Without health, no pleasure can be tasted by man. Without liberty, no happiness can be enjoyed by society. So it's a very profound thing. Now, one of the things I used to use as a description about liberty and freedom is that it's something akin to the metaphor of a turtle and its home. Now, we think of the turtle's home as something he carries with him, his shell. He can always hide inside of it and protect himself. But what is that shell in a turtle? You know, it's his backbone. It's his living body. And so we carry around freedom in us just as the turtle carries his home. It's part of us. And very much it's our backbone. And how much courage and strength, and maybe not even strength, but the choice, because we're not all strong, but the choice to be authentic, the choice to allow the movement of life, you know, I would say through the branches of the trees, I mean, so that life can move, and we as part of it, you and I and everyone else and every other living thing on the planet are participating in this spontaneous, but this could sound contradictory, but planned layout called life, you know, the world, the universe. It's so incredibly organized and yet so completely spontaneous. And it is the paradox of those two that makes its way into our daily lives, too. Because to be planning for things, to lay down groundwork well, is important. One can even make a case. It's great to have rules. But rules need to be, for me, a guideline. They need to be there to help us get anchored and on the same page so we can better connect. Rules can be made criminal. Rules can be made not healthy. And in our culture, you know, we talk about the rule of law and as the rule of laws, not men, meaning you can't just do what someone says. You make these ground rules, like called the Constitution, and they're made very pure, very anchoring, very specific, yet with lots of room around them for growth, yet the core importance is there, the core importance of respecting freedom. And yet, though laws are important, they also can be just used so badly. Another great Thomas Jefferson quote is, "Rightful liberty is unobstructed action according to our will within limits drawn around us by the equal rights of others." And then he says, "I do not add within the limits of the law, because law is often but the tyrant's will, and always so when it violates the rights of the individual." So, of course, I'm certainly thinking on the spying of Americans and their phones and emails and all of the current violation of the Constitution that's been going on secretly for over 4 years. And this is a violation. This, I don't care what law you make up post violating the law of the Constitution and the FISA Act, it's still illegal. In the sense that it's illegal before, and even if you pass a law to make it legal, which is going to be contested because they did do just that, which means that the president, and the new law means that the president, by the president's will alone, any one of us can be arrested, incarcerated without a trial, and nobody will know about it, and that's okay. This is so foolish that it will not stand. But what astounds me is how few people know about it. And this is the other thing about freedom and liberty, is that people have to be aware, and they have to be even so far as to say enlightened, grown up, earnest, alive, present, and knowledgeable. And all of this is very hard come these days. I can't get away from Thomas Jefferson. He said, "Enlighten the people generally, and tyranny and oppressions of the body and mind will vanish like evil spirits at the dawn of day." In other words, if the people are educated, if the people are knowledgeable, we don't really have to worry about our democracy and freedoms, because people will claim it. And I think that's the wonderful danger, opportunity, crisis situation that we're in right now, is that we are on the brink of, almost without thinking about it, throwing away everything America has pioneered and created and stood for over 200 years. It's really amazing how many people don't even realize what it is. And perhaps that has a correlation with our personal lives and with our personal sense of freedom and humanity, and are losing track of what it means to be free, what it means in the microcosm and the macrocosm. In the microcosm, it means you have to have empathy, and you have to be at least honest with yourself. You have to look at yourself and self-correct as you go along. This is what keeps the mind open, which is freedom. If your mind isn't open, you're definitely not free. If you're injured so badly that you cannot think clearly, you will not be free. This is also what freedom is. It's the freedom to have your person sound. And that's why violating children is such a terrible crime. And why the grown-ups that do it aren't grown up, of course, psychologically, and don't often even have an awareness of how horrific what they're doing is. In fact, it's almost the reverse. They keep trying to go into denial and a kind of blind niche to justify it, to say it's okay. Now, you might say, well, Patricia, how does that have to do with our freedom and what we're talking about? Because it's what I'm talking about is what scars us, what injures us, from our God-given sensibility to know what is wholesome for us and what is not. What confuses us, what violates us and injures us so badly that we don't see well, that we don't have a backbone, that we don't have the enlightenment necessary to discern what is healthy, what is empowering, and what is not. And I think this election that we're 2 weeks away from is such a turning point for our awareness, and how awake are we? And I find it very interesting that CNN and MSNBC are putting out these pro programs now. CNN is our broken government, and MSNBC is talking about what's wrong in the past and why the election is important. But what struck me almost, had me jumping up and down, was what they're talking about now, if you get to catch it, about the voter rigging that's possible because of the Diebold and other electronic machines that have no paper trail, that a Diebold machine can be hacked within less than a minute, and the vote changed, and there is no record, there is no tally, there's nothing to go back and look at once the vote is changed. That is the vote, doesn't matter what anybody voted, that's how it is, and there's no record, and that's in over about 80% of the voting districts in our country. Do you think this is not going to be tempting to someone to fix this? I'll get back to that in a minute. But what I really wanted to keep saying was how I was so upset that why didn't they have these shows 2 years ago when the very things they're exposing now 2 weeks before the election were happening? Why weren't they saying this is what is happening and this is a violation and this is a dishonesty and this is a danger of these machines? So we would have 2 years. I mean, it was only in those outer fringes of the media, including myself at the time. I remember doing shows on years ago on the danger of electronic voting machines. There were computer scientists from universities across the country writing letters to the editor and to the television networks and writing articles saying this is incredibly dangerous. This is very easy to hack. It's only useful if there is another paper trail, if there is another way to count the votes, because this is too easy for voter fraud. And they keep saying voter fraud. And everybody goes, voter fraud, voter fraud. Oh, that's like saying somebody who's dead got to vote. It gets all mixed up. It means closing the polls or not letting there be enough machines in certain districts so that people don't get a chance to vote. And yeah, that's all voter fraud, too. But this is the kind of voter fraud that completely wipes out our freedom in America in one election. This is a kind of voter fraud that makes us a false and fake democracy, because it's a false and fake vote. And they don't have to be everywhere. They only have to go to the districts where they have easy access. You know that voting sites are manned by volunteers. This is so awesomely dangerous. And it still seems to me everybody's hiding their head in the sand about what can happen in 2 weeks and not talking about it. As they said on the CNN program and many others, that there's a 73% record disapproval rate for Congress. And the public is finally getting in touch almost in a cumulative way with the failures, the incompetence, the corruption of the Republican Congress, House and Senate. Doesn't mean there aren't Democrats doing things they shouldn't do. It just means that the people who have the power and who are massively collectively doing decision making have this corruption and influence from corporations and payoffs. And I mean, it's really, really outrageous. So finally, it's seeping into the collective consciousness. 73% disapproval rate. But then it struck me. I remember hearing just recently one of the White House reporters, in a number of places actually it was commented on, how George Bush and Karl Rove are very certain and very confident they will not lose the House and Senate. And I put down a quote. Reporters have reported that they, quote, almost seem delusionally certain they will win the House and Senate in November. And when I heard that, it gave me chills, because it reminded me in the year 2000 when the networks were using exit polls. they declared Al Gore the winner in Florida. And one of the networks went live to Crawford to get Bush's reaction. He was there with his family, and I remember this clearly. When they told him about it, Bush smiled, almost laughing. And he said, oh, no, that's not right. We've got Florida. And it gave me this shiver down my neck as I realized he knew, or at the very least, because he was sort of unable to hide his certainty, even his almost gloating, it was obvious to me that he at least believed that he had inside information that he was going to win Florida. And I never saw that clip shown again. It was never replayed to my knowledge. I kept looking for it. And the media has been incredibly quiet about the abundance of serious information on voter fraud for the last 6 years. And there were rumors of memos. I know some people personally who know someone who got a memo from their corporate supervisors that any reporters that covered these questionable races were not to do so. They weren't even supposed to be brought up. Now, the psychology behind that supposedly at the time was that they were very burned, you know, by having made a wrong exit poll determination that declared Al Gore the winner in Florida before the votes were counted. But what is a fact that is almost never mentioned is when finally all the votes were counted, Al Gore won the popular vote throughout Florida, including all of Florida, he won. And to me, I can understand why people don't want to mention it because it's so uneasy making. But that's the kind of that's the kind of hiding from ourselves that throws away our freedom. And it isn't a matter of blaming or judging or being mean to somebody to tell the truth about what they're doing. If what they're doing is a very bad thing that causes a lot of harm, you're not attacking them by saying what's wrong. And the more you're not energetically attacking them, but merely making really clear what's wrong, the healthier we are. Because of our polarized thinking style, our immaturity collectively, humanity, we have difficulty not being either for or against. And if you point out something that is devastatingly terrible that someone has done, the media will accuse you of attacking them. When you have no interest in attacking them whatsoever, you only have interest in the truth being clear and mistakes being seen so they can be corrected. This is where we've lost our bearings. This is why we are on the verge of losing our freedom. And that's why tyrants come about. Because we get simplistic in our thinking, and it always favors the tyrant, because there's a vacuum on honesty. There's a vacuum on information. And that's why Thomas Jefferson, of course, kept saying that we really have to respect the need for knowledge and education if we're to keep our freedom. And I think that nothing is more important, really, than our growing and our being conscious. Because from that place, we are in freedom. Because freedom really is about the growth. It's about the seeing. It's about the being awake. It's about the willingness, ability to tell the truth. And that's why freedom is with you like a turtle shell is its home is because you always have the freedom to tell the truth. It's true, you know, you can have brown shirts and you can have people spying on you and you can get arrested and you can have the collective sink into tyranny, which makes it very difficult. But interestingly, the greatest antidote to that is not being afraid of that, but thinking for yourself anyway. And if you disagree with someone, that's okay. You have a discussion about the disagreement, and you see that probably both of you perhaps might learn something you didn't know before, at the very least, a greater clarity of what the other person thought, and at the very best, some insights or points of view or knowledge that you didn't know about that alter and expand what you know. This is the value of freedom. This is why it's essential. No nervous system can work without the constant feedback of self-correction. You can't even stand up on your own two feet without the complex, constant feedback from the nerves in your body to your brain and then back again about where you're at. You can't self-correct. If you can't self-correct, you can't stand up. And this is a powerful metaphor. And it is the core of our need for freedom and why freedom is so important. It really is a biological truth. If you keep a horse in a stall, they become lame. They need the freedom. If you keep a dog in the house too long, they'll start tearing up your house. They need freedom. It's not because they're bad. It's because you're not seeing what they need. And if we keep children sitting at desks and not letting them move around, then they become compulsive, they get hyperactive, and then we give them drugs so they're doped out so they can't move around. We keep choosing solutions that stop the short-term symptom that we should be really looking at the cause of that symptom, where we really need to see that the symptom is a symptom. And instead of getting just upset about a symptom, let's look at where it's coming from and amplify the freedom and the health and the communication and the spontaneity of interaction. This is what causes us to grow up. This is what causes humanity to develop. You know, there's a sociologist who lived in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and his name was Charles Horton Cooley, and he said, no matter what a man does, he's not fully sane or human unless there's a spirit of freedom in him, a soul unconfined by purpose and larger than the practicable world. In other words, there is a core soul in us that needs to be heard from. And it's written in our DNA what we need biologically. And the interaction of our DNA and our soul is the freedom to discover and self-correct. It is the big secret of the great power of freedom. And when we start doing the reverse, when we start ending freedoms in the name of creating order or protecting ourselves, we of course lose everything. As Benjamin Franklin said, see if I can remember it, it's if we are willing to sacrifice our liberty in the name of security, we will have neither. Well, of course. That's why, because it's not just a noun or a word or an ideology. It's a state of being, freedom. And it's the state of being that lets you self-correct. And if you start making it an ideology and then defining certain people as blocking your ideology And then, therefore, you have the right to take away their freedom because they're blocking your ideology for freedom. Then you get into the terrible mess we're in because people are saying words with no comprehension in a living sense of what they mean. This is what the evolutionary leap is really about. It's about our ability to be free, self-correct, perceive, interact, get new information, change our minds, grow, being guided by our soul, by our sense of what's wholesome physically. We used to call this conscience. Conscience is a word that literally means knowledge through sentience, knowledge through feeling. The knowledge that comes from how it feels. And when we respect how we feel, and we respect how others feel, and we go even further to extend our perceptive abilities to have some empathy, to have some standing in their shoes, some there but for the grace of God go I. As we start to do that, our brains change, and our intelligence makes a quantum leap in expansion and ability and creativity and perception. And this is the importance and power of freedom. This is what it's really about. Now, we're going to be taking a break in just a second, and I hope you can listen to it and give us some support. But we will be right back, and we will be talking about freedom, and what is it, and why it's powerful, and why we need to keep reminding ourselves what it is. So I hope you'll join me in just a moment. We'll be right back. This is Patricia Sun, and you're listening to Trust the Problem.
Trust the Problem is sponsored by a nonprofit organization, the Institute of Communication for Understanding, ICU. We rely on you, our listeners, for donations to keep us on the air. To help, please visit patriciasun.com and receive a free Can't Take Sides When You Know the Earth is Round t-shirt with your donation. Thank you.
Welcome back to Trust the Problem. And now, Patricia.
Welcome back to Trust the Problem. This is Patricia Sun. And of course, the problem we're talking about today is the freedom. What is it? Why is it important? Why are we losing it? Why are we creating it? Every day, we are losing it and creating it every day. And in so many ways. And you know, I think of an analogy I used to use years ago about people worrying about in linear-minded ways about keeping things, you know, and keeping what they want and the keeping alive and how we get too linear. We don't trust the spontaneity of the intuitive mind and the inspiration from spirit and the flow of things. And I used to say it's as though, you know, we could be worrying about ourselves dying. Well, you know, every time you walk around, you kill cells in your feet. If you're sitting down right now, you're killing cells in your bottom, because you kill cells by being alive. The good news is your body is constantly replenishing and creating new ones. And as we become more spiritually alive, the quality of this rebuilding changes, and you actually can get stronger. That's why exercise strengthens and transforms the body. Because if you've been inactive, everything sort of sinks and gets out of alignment. And as you start to exercise, cells die everywhere. But they are new cells made that are more aligned with being awake, more aligned with moving, more aligned with being alive. And so you bring your body's health to a better level. And this is the metaphor. It's not a linear one. It's an organic one. And we are shifting from simplistic, super, super, duper simplistic thinking, reactionary, black and white, you're for me or you're against me, as both Bin Laden and President Bush have said, in the same week or 2 weeks of each other. Identical phrase. And it's the identical dysfunction that you cannot see all of the creative power in between the two polarities. And the two polarities, whenever you have to face something that's unpleasant or that you've done wrong, quote unquote, is first denial. That's not us. Let's not even go there. It's not us. So first there's denial, then as the facts start to pile up and you have enough intellectual integrity or just it's overwhelmingly evident, as the facts pile up, then we move into despair because it's true. And Al Gore uses that polarity, as I have actually through the years, to explain the difficulty with facing the inconvenient truth of global warming. Is because first, let's just deny it, and then maybe it'll go away. But of course, it doesn't. It gets worse, and the facts become overwhelming. And as soon as we have to face it's real, then we have all this despair, and not least of which, because of a certain amount of shame at having been in denial, and having had denial play a role in making it much worse. So it's very painful if that's the way you hold things. But if you shift it to a more free, open way of knowing how life moves and how human beings learn and how life grows and changes and how evolution adapts and how we all keep trusting the problems to solve them and make life better. Because when you get a problem, it's there because you finally have the awareness or maturity or knowledge that is telling you this isn't working right. That's what makes it a problem. It could have existed before, but you didn't know you had the problem. When you know you have a problem, you are ripe to grow, to make an exponential leap in awareness and capability. It's a wake-up call. It's a way of remobilizing to make not only your human body more healthy. That's why sometimes when people get serious illnesses, it transforms their lives, not just out of the negativity, but that they cannot stay at the level of denial where they were. They have to begin experiencing out pain or dysfunction or things they've closed themselves from seeing. This is the key source of healing. And when we face it, when we embrace it, the huge leap in maturity and wisdom and vitality and inventiveness and possibility is just wondrous. And that's why there's really what's going on is a shift in the way we think, that we are restructuring how we hold things. And to have the freest country in the world, with all its many faults, be on the verge of completely, completely throwing away its freedom. Now, I do want to, while I've got the time here, encourage you to write, send emails to CNN and to any media, any newspaper, all you can think of, and ask them, please, to do exit polls. Because exit polls, interestingly, are the only thing left to get honesty, light, feedback on just in case, you know, Karl Rove and et al. Are tempted to use to influence certain elections. Doesn't have to be that many. You just don't know which ones they'll be. But to alter the election outcome so that they don't lose the House and the Senate. Because, you know, if ever there was incentive to do this, because they've done things that are against the law, at the very least, horribly unethical and destructive and dishonest, and they're all going to come out if they have hearings, which, of course, for us to be healthy, given the whole premise I've just been talking about, we need to see what we need to self-correct, so we do need to have hearings. And it doesn't really, you know, the idea of Republicans and Democrats, it doesn't really matter. There's such a foolish polarization that's been set up to just drive us to this place. It's just about being healthy. It's about being creative and inspired and mature and able to do things and being able to see. But I digress. If it gets to the point where they are tempted and they do fix the election, you'll know, because they'll win the House and the Senate. But the only check on it are exit polls. You know, third world countries use exit polls by other countries to keep track whether the vote was honest. Also, Europe uses exit polls on a regular basis to keep track and affirm the honesty of elections. And in Germany, the disparity of the exit poll to the actual election result is less than 0.3%. Exit polls are statistically extremely accurate. And, of course, they're even more reliable if there are several of them happening by different people, perhaps with some different motivations, so that you have more than one, or like blind studies, so you don't know which side you're counting. You're just counting goes from the person asking into, and this is what good pollers do, goes right into the assessment of how many, and not necessarily knowing who. So there's not that much chance to skew it. The whole point is to get an exit poll. If we did have exit polls done by CNN and ABC and CBS, and we had some other light on the subject, our democracy would still be awake, because we could refer to it. And when there's an extreme variance, I mean, it's like chances of one in millions when there's these extreme variances that the exit poll is wrong. It's like one in millions. So if we did exit polls, especially on all the crucial races, Missouri and Ohio and Florida and Tennessee, if we really just kept track, we would be staying alive. Our people would be saying, yeah, let's keep paying attention here. This could happen. The scary thing to me is that this is not sort of mainstream news. I mean, only just this week did CNN start talking about how easy it is to hack a Diebold machine. And even then, their feistiest interviewers still sort of down-pedal the information and say, well, then, you know, what happens to our democracy if people lose faith in the vote? It's not about losing faith in the vote so much as it is losing the vote. We need to not lose the vote. And that's what we need to be focused on. And so I do encourage you all to just send out emails to all these different places, the different shows, and say, please, check this out. Why don't we have voting polls? They do it in Europe. They do it all around the world to check on the validity of elections. If these electronic machines are so easy to hack, then our only recourse at this late date, 6 years later, 2 years later after 2004. At this late date, the only alternative is our confidence in media and journalism, and that there are some journalists left who will take it seriously. This is a fabulous story for them. Gives them all kudos and gold medals. And they have the financing, they have the wherewithal, they have the connections. They do it for presidential elections. Just do it for this election. Because this is the election not about who's president, but about whether we've lost democracy. Totally. Because then you don't think everything is going to sink in back on itself to cover everything up. And of course, it's still, if that happens, then we're just all on our mettle to speak up some more, to have freedom really be real, and to know you have the freedom to do it. It is still an incredible country. We still have somewhere some awareness of the importance of freedom and what it really is, and the importance of practicing what we preach, and the importance of correcting ourselves if we get off track, as all humans are not only entitled to do, will inevitably do. So the problem isn't so much that we get off track. The problem is that we get stuck off track. If we don't bring ourselves around to rebalance again. You know, it's not a problem that you misstep and lose your balance a little. The problem is if you say, oh, I'm losing my balance now, there's nothing I can do, you know, and you fall off the cliff or, you know, down in the middle of the street. I mean, you don't have to do that. It's not all or nothing at all. It's not either or. Freedom is the creative power. It's the state that allows the creative power to move. So you rediscover, you reinvent, and you see new things. This is why it's such an exciting time right now. I'm actually fairly optimistic. I just wish that there was just more awareness about this. And that more people were given a heads up about what it takes to really request these exit polls. Of course, you can also pray. You can pray that the people who have the knowledge and the wherewithal to create the exit polls will go ahead and do it, at least in the crucial areas. So there is, at the very least, then what we would have to do is hold another election, because there'll be no record other than the exit poll. I hope I've made this clear, because I think it's astounding that 2 weeks, as I say, before the election that can close down all elections is about to happen. Well, I do believe, as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free, in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. And I think America's sort of there. We kind of think we can be ignorant and stay free, that will be civilized, that will work. And you know, I don't think it's all evil or anything. I even honestly think George Bush sort of thinks that. That he can stay ignorant and he can not know and he can just make edicts and that'll make it all right. That's a wounded person's style of thinking. It's limited by the woundedness. It's limited by the lack of freedom to think, because when you're injured as a child, you build defenses, and the defenses become walls on your mind. They become prisons. They become armor that may protect you somewhat from blows, but it so disenfranchises you, it so blinds you, it so disconnects you from the information feedback that you need from the world to really take care of yourself, that you're actually in more danger. And, you know, this is an exciting time to be alive. people everywhere are coming upon bits and pieces of what I'm saying. I think more and more on their own than ever before. And if we support each other in the power of being just common sense, healthy, pay attention, keep understanding why freedom is important, respecting it, giving people a chance to say what they think, and giving yourself a chance to give the response. And be prepared. Maybe your response is right on target and it makes them crazy. Maybe your response is 90% on target and put 10% off and you'll get attacked for the 10%, but then you'll get to learn what that is. Or maybe you've made a lot of big mistakes and you'll learn what that is. Or maybe you're right on and the person looks at you and hugs you with their heart and says, oh God, thanks for saying that. I knew there was something, but I didn't know what it was. And they hug you with their heart. Because we need each other. And the wonderful paradox about freedom is that as we are free, we are more connected. And it's a beautiful paradox. And if we try to force connection, we reduce freedom. The more we allow freedom, the more everyone can think for themselves, the more able they are to love, the more able they are to see, and the more able we are to all connect to one another. This is what we crave. We're looking for that integrity. We're looking for that freedom of trust. And trust and verify, as is the ancient, you know, Russian proverb, is of course. Trust means open your heart. Verify means open your mind. If we opened our hearts and our minds, we will discover all kinds of new things. This is the delight of freedom. This is the joy of freedom. And it's what it is. It's that state. It's not something you give someone. It's something you let bloom inside yourself. And that's why it's like a turtle's back. You carry it with you. It's part of your living substance. And your whole backbone and your whole nervous system are totally connected to it. And as we realize that, we mature. As we realize that, we invent things we never could conceive of before. Problems become great takeoff points for inventing something that jumps the track. And if you have a whole bunch of problems that all converge and you pay attention to all of them, what happens is by taking the input from all the problems, you jump the track and invent a solution that covers the overview, that doesn't have so many or any unintended consequences because you let all the problems in. I don't know if this is a really good example, but it's one that I want to keep promoting and talking about that I think is a bit of an example of this. We've had the problem, of course, with global warming. And it is not only coming from the cars, the burning of carbon fuels, not only cars, but power plants, coal and oil power plants around the world. Now, it's interesting. We think of hydrogen because it's the most common element in the universe. And water is H2O2. So, two molecules of hydrogen, two molecules of oxygen. If you break it up to get the hydrogen, what you've got left is water. My, how clean. We've got solar power and photovoltaic cells, like they're developing better and better in Japan, where rooftops, beautiful tile rooftops, which are really photovoltaic cells, just sitting on your roof, giving you all the electricity you need inside to cook and vacuum and watch TV or do whatever else, or turn on the air conditioner. You've got it. There's wind power, which comes from the climate of the earth, the movements of the wind, which are happening and going to happen all the time anyway. So you sit, that's like completely clean. You just set up a turbine where it's really windy, and you generate a lot of electricity. So if you start thinking of all these things and you start looping them together, what if we had only electric cars, which are silent and clean and less moving parts and don't break down so much and have greater pickup and just fabulous, fabulous. So much better than internal combustion engines in every way that matters. It's amazing. So what if you had electric cars that you plugged in to your house or where you worked? And the electricity that your home gets or your work gets comes from a power plant that is fueled by hydrogen. Because the real danger of hydrogen is it's so flammable. I've talked about this before. And easy to contain and control in one locale. And if you did have a fire, you'd have a fire, and that's it. But if you make it like gas stations, hydrogen fuel stations, and you have hydrogen fuel cars, you have cars that are going to be blowing up. You have gas stations that are going, can be blowing up. Very foolish, poor design. Hydrogen, yes. Hydrogen car, no. Hydrogen stations, no, unless they're power stations built in safe locations with all the checks to keep it safe. Now, you could also make hydrogen fuel out at sea, where there's endless wind. You could have solar panels out at sea, generating electricity to make hydrogen out of the water, take tankers of hydrogen to the power plants along the shores where they now have all these nuclear power plants, take them all down, and put up hydrogen plants. We would have complete power using just nature, the sun, the wind, the water, and we would have all the energy we need. We would create no more global warming. We would create no more fossil fuels. We would have better cars. Everything would be cleaner. Everyone on the planet would have access. People in more desolate areas in Africa, South America, many other places in the world where it's more desolate, they would have access to energy to build their lives. There's so much we could do that if you take the overview, if you have the freedom to do that, if you don't have vested interests with very short sight, trying to just keep control of making endless money so that they almost have become deranged, taking away the freedom of everyone else to think or to even see or know about other solutions, buying up patents that are better so that they can't be used, so we have to stay using oil. I heard Al Gore just yesterday at a talk here in Berkeley, California, and he quoted, I think it was, if I can remember, it's off the top of my head, but he quoted a Saudi Arabian minister, I think, who said, people changed out of the Stone Age not because there was a shortage of stone. And we're going to change out of the oil-burning age, coal-burning age, not because there's a shortage of oil and coal, but because so much better. Of course, that wasn't the minister's, I guess, entire thought. He was saying, he was actually explaining how they could keep it going longer. By as soon as there seems to be a shortage and the prices have been going up too high, then lower the prices and get people hooked in again. This is what the media should be reporting on. This is what journalism is about. This is what a free press is about. And now we have the internet. We have radio shows on the internet. We have blogs. We have all kinds of video. We now are creating a new nervous system for the planet. A global connection that lets us get immediate feedback to increase our balance. And what may be good for you in your area may not be good for me in my area. And it's good for me to know that, and it's good for you to know that. Or if we communicate, maybe it's good for both of us. It's the openness. It's the freedom to see and discover and move and use. I am always against ideologies because they deadlock us so much. But use good concepts, use good ideas to ground us and nurture us, but never to blind us. Keep it as a wholesome support for actualizing what's healthy and good. Now, before this show is over, I want to read two quotes to you. I think I've read one before. They're both by Lincoln. And I've just written an article, which I'm going to send to the Huffington Post. I don't know if they'll post it or not. But anyway, it's about the boat that we talked about a little bit today. False, fake vote, fake democracy. And the first quote is from Abraham Lincoln. And one of the problems, of course, is we're corporate run. We've lost our freedom to the mindlessness of corporate dominance and control. And this is what Abraham Lincoln said in 1864 in a letter to a friend. I see in the near future a crisis approaching that unnerves me and causes me to tremble for the safety of my country. As a result of the war, corporations have been enthroned, and an era of corruption in high places will follow, and the money power of the country will endeavor to prolong its reign by working upon the prejudices of the people until all wealth is aggregated in a few hands and the republic is destroyed. I feel at this moment more anxiety for the safety of my country than ever before, even in the midst of war. Of course, that's how I feel now, but I feel still also more hopeful than he, because I see it's part of a bigger process. So we're coming to an end. I'm going to save the second quote, the last sentence of which is, the way is plain, peaceful, generous, just, a way which if we followed, the world would forever applaud, and God must forever bless. Bless us all. You're listening to Trust the Problem. I'm Patricia Sun. See you next week.
You've been listening to Trust the Problem with Patricia Sun. This program and its content is copywritten to Patricia Sun, all rights reserved, 2006.